Hey, who's this? Oh, I'm Vermont Edition producer Andrea Lorien. I'm usually behind the scenes, but I'm here to tell you that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Hope you enjoy it. Thanks.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. For many travelers, booking an Airbnb is now more convenient and cost-effective than getting a hotel room. And renting out a room or property helps some Vermonters boost their income. The average monthly revenue for Vermont's short-term rentals is $4,000. And the number of these rentals is going up, according to newly released information from the Vermont Housing Finance Agency. This September, there were more active short-term rentals, nearly 12,000, and more than 51,000 reservations made. That's more than any month in Vermont on record. Now, later in the show, we're going to speak with town planners from Killington and Chester. They are two of the Vermont towns that are trying to track and regulate short-term rentals. But first, I'm joined by my colleague, Carly Berlin. She covers housing and infrastructure for Vermont Public and VT Digger. And earlier this week, Carly attended a short-term rental industry trade show in South Burlington. Carly, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Industry trade show and your Vermont Edition debut. This is a very big week.
Indeed.
So, Carly, let's define some terms here. When we say short-term rental or STR, what are we talking about?
Right. So we mean the types of units listed on platforms like Airbnb and VRBO, like you mentioned. Typically, we're talking about furnished units rented out for short periods of time, generally under 30 consecutive days at a time. Once you reach that threshold, you trigger Vermont landlord-tenant law. That really changes the game. Mm. We're also talking about, you know, entire single-family homes, townhouses, apartments, sometimes seasonal cabins, or just a room in someone's house. So it really is in that whole range.
Okay. So can it include what we think of as vacation homes?
Yeah. So a little different. And, you know, vacation homes in Vermont are, of course, not a new thing. It can be difficult to know the overlap between short-term rentals and existing seasonal vacation homes. It's partly because of how that data is tracked. The Census Bureau tracks that seasonal vacation or occasional use homes, and we know those types of homes make up about 16% of Vermont's total housing stock, which is a lot. Meanwhile, short-term rentals make up a little more than 3.5%, though that data comes from, you know, private sources kind of scraping Airbnb, VRBO. We don't totally know how those two different data sets overlap with each other.
Gotcha. Yeah. Let's dig into the data here a little bit more because, you know, we anecdotally hear that there has been an increase in short-term rental units, especially since the pandemic. And anecdotally, depending on what neighborhood or town you live in, that could definitely feel true. But are there numbers to back that up?
Yeah, there are. So there's been a pretty sizable increase in short-term rentals in Vermont over the last couple of years. So the Vermont Housing Finance Agency tracks this data. They get some of that private scrape data from the platforms, and they parse it out to look at just full unit rentals, not kind of the partial ones, just a room in somebody's house. Mm. And, you know, as of September of this year, Vermont saw the highest number of active STRs to date, close to 12,000. That's a 16% increase in the number of homes used as STR statewide compared to the same month in 2022. So that's a pretty big jump. You know, there are some seasonal variations in STRs here. That fall foliage season in September, October is typically kind of the high point of the year. And there's really been a rapid increase over the last couple of years. You know, as recently as 2021, that September high point was more like 8,000. So now it's 12,000. Big jump.
That's a huge jump. Okay, so we're kind of coming out of the high season. Maybe there's a little bit of a lull for stick season, and then I'm guessing with ski season right around the corner that more and more folks are going to be coming in using these short-term rentals. Speaking of ski season, what are some of the towns that see the most short-term rentals?
So as you might expect, a lot of them are the ski resort towns. Yeah. So the top five are Stowe, Killington, Ludlow, Dover, and Warren. Stowe alone had close to 1,000 STRs in September. It's also worth noting that these are some of the same towns with the most seasonal homes, too.
Mm. So you were at a trade show earlier this week that was all about short-term rentals. What exactly was it? Who was there?
So this event is an annual conference put on by the Vermont Short-Term Rental Alliance. They're a business association for short-term rental owners and managers in Vermont. There were operators from across the state there, as well as, you know, vendors that cater to this industry, marketing firms, direct booking platforms, all that kind of stuff.
Mm, okay. And what did you learn?
So, you know, I'm coming at this topic as a housing reporter, right? So yeah. I'm interested in how short-term rentals impact the long-term housing market. What do we know about that? What do we not know? You know, I really heard this narrative at the conference this week that STR owners and operators feel they're being scapegoated as a major cause of Vermont's housing shortage. You know, it does make some sense that they might be on the defensive about this. STRs have become a pretty contentious issue for towns across the state, and we're seeing a lot of reports of packed town meetings debating how to regulate them. Town planning commissions coming out with different suggestions. Towns are taking a whole range of different approaches. And, you know, in part, these conversations are spurred by Vermont's extremely tight housing market. We've all heard these stories of how difficult it is to find housing in many parts of the state, affordable housing especially. And, you know, there's some basic logic here when it comes to STRs. You know, if more and more homes get used as short-term rentals, fewer are available as long-term rentals. So there was this real emphasis at the conference that STRs are, you know, not part of the housing problem. The focus needs to be on developing more housing, not restricting STRs.
Mm. Yeah. And listeners, I'm curious how you fall on this debate. Do you think that short-term rentals are a boon to your local economy? Maybe you manage one? Or have you been kicked out of an apartment because the landlord or owner was going to turn it into a short-term rental? Maybe that felt frustrating to you, especially if you couldn't find another place to live. Our number is 800-639-2211. And Carly, ahead of today's show, we got a number of emails from listeners about this topic. Read a couple here. One from a listener named Isaac, who writes, "Many folks are renting their properties out on the short-term market because it's scary to be in the long-term rental market. It is extremely difficult to remove a tenant, and everyone has heard stories about how long it takes to go through the eviction process. I think that regulating or restricting the short-term market will not increase the number of available housing units in the state. Most people will just choose not to rent out those properties at all." Isaac's point is kind of getting to what you were talking about like, the triggering the change between a short-term rental and a long-term rental, and how folks, it sounds like, might be interested in staying in that short-term market because of some of the regulations that exist for the long-term market.
Yeah, I've certainly heard that argument too. And, you know, we don't know the property conversion history. We don't have that data to kind of know how, you know, short-term rentals might be getting converted from long-term rentals, you know, taking those units off the market. You know, one way that I have heard the impact of the long-term market kind of explained is, you know, we have razor-thin long-term rental vacancy rates in Vermont, right? And so you know, taking those long-term rentals off the market potentially, you know, places even more downward pressure on those vacancy rates, makes it, you know, potentially even harder to find your, you know, typical year-round rental.
Mm. Well, we also got an email from Erica in West Dover who says, "I worked in affordable housing for many years and am now a full-time realtor in Vermont. And she and her husband are currently setting up and renovating two properties in southern Vermont as vacation properties." And Erica points to a couple reasons why they're doing that, including the fact that for them, the cost of living is so high that they have turned to this additional income stream to try to live comfortably here. And the fact that Erica, you know, lives in Westover and is renting out properties makes me wonder, Carly, what we know about who owns and manages short-term rentals in the state. Like, are they typically Vermonters or are they out-of-staters?
Yeah, good question. So according to the Vermont Housing Finance Agency, most hosts of STRs in Vermont are Vermont residents. It's about 55%. The rest are generally from other nearby states, so New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut. You know, I have also heard from researchers at the Vermont Housing Finance Agency that, you know, the vast majority of STR owners have just one unit. You know, though there are a handful of management companies that have, you know, much bigger portfolios of STRs. Mm.
Well, let's go to the calls, the phones here. We have a call from Len in Jamaica. Len, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing? Quickly, my wife and I own a commercial building in Jamaica, and so we also have a small loft apartment that we use as short-term rental. We are, because it's a commercial building, we are inspected and regulated, and you know, our position is that we are all for regulation. But the big question that I have is when you have a short-term rental and the house has three bedrooms, what is happening to the septic system and to the wastewater systems in these houses? I've been in some of these houses and seen upwards of 19 beds in a three-bedroom house. So I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, that's a great question, Len. And I'll note that we'll have two town planners on later in the show, one from Killington and one from Chester, that are both trying to answer that question. But Carly, I'm curious if that's come up in your reporting at all just yet.
Yeah, I know, you know, towns are taking a whole host of different approaches for how to, you know, regulate STRs. One of the approaches I have heard of is you know, limiting those, placing occupancy requirements and really trying to put in place some infrastructure to track and enforce those. So it's certainly not a new idea. It's something that's surfacing.
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing that up, Lynn. And we'll dive in deeper a little bit later in the hour as well. Carly, let's go back to the economic impact, positive or negative, that short-term rentals can have. What have you learned in your reporting?
Yeah, so, you know, an argument I heard at this conference earlier this week is that, you know, STRs are an important facet of the local tourism market. People who stay in them, you know, go on to spend their money at local businesses. They also bring in a lot of money for the state through the meals and rooms tax. In terms of revenue, you know, according to VHFA's analysis, the average monthly revenue for a Vermont short-term rental crossed $5,000 for the first time in February of this year. It's a pretty eye-popping number, you know, and it shows how lucrative a business this can be for short-term rental owners and operators. You know, that $5,000 number, certainly a good bit more than most year-round rentals go for in Vermont. So if you're a property owner, that, you know, is a fairly attractive market for you potentially.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have a call from Zoe in East Montpelier. Zoe, go ahead.
Hi. I had a couple of questions. The first was addressing where you got the data regarding how many owners were from Vermont, because I know that part of the problem with not having a regulated market is that even local towns are having a hard time finding accurate data on how many residents have short-term rentals.
Well, like, let me ask. Let me get Carly's feedback on that real quick, then we'll get back to you, Zoe. Where is that data from again?
Yeah, so that data is from the Vermont Housing Finance Agency. They purchased data from a third party called AirDNA that scrapes data from Airbnb, VRBO, some of those popular vacation rental sites. So I'm citing data that they have analyzed. I know that this is an issue on the town level. You know, trying to a number of towns are looking at putting registries in place to try to gather some more data. You know, what VHFA has, as far as I understand, is, you know, as best data they can get from the websites themselves, what hosts offer. And so when towns put in a registry, they might be able to get some additional information, contact information, things like that, that isn't necessarily available just through the platforms themselves.
Mm. Great. And Zoe, back to you. Did you have another question?
I was hoping the taxes, I've heard, I'm not sure if I wanted to clarify, that a lot of taxes go to the Airbnb company instead of the state of Vermont. And I've also heard that there have been issues in terms of having a lack of regulation and, for example, safety violations with these places. So I was hoping you could address both of those things, the taxes and issues with regulation or lack thereof.
Hmm. Carly, have you been following either of those issues? And if not, we can also talk about them with the town planners we'll be having on in just a moment.
Yeah, they might have a little bit more expertise on the, you know, the tax portion than I do. I know, and the, you know, health and safety portion as well. I know that what a lot of towns are considering in terms of a registry would require some kinds of basic health and safety, you know, provisions, inspections, things like that. It really varies from town to town. And so I know that that is part of the conversation playing out in a number of different places right now.
Mm, okay. So Zoe, stay with us. We'll dive into that in just a moment. And we got a similar question from a listener named Astrid, who's in the Okemo area and operates one short-term rental. And she asks, rather hypothetically, I believe, what has been documented specifically that's altered quality of life for full-time residents? How many nuisance calls to police? How many calls to fire departments? How many ambulance calls? Where's the evidence-based information to make the argument for more STR regulations beyond anecdotes? Blaming STRs for housing woes is not a solution. And Astrid also says Vermont is a tourist state by its own design and wonders, would it be better to have mega hotels here instead? So, Carly, what I'm sensing from at least a lot of the emails that we've gotten is people are feeling really fired up about this. You know, folks who care a lot about being able to get that extra income from a short-term rental, feeling concerned, maybe frustrated by some of the regulations. And other folks are saying, hey, we have a housing crisis, and this could be one way to address it. So what will you be looking towards in the future as you continue your reporting?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really curious to see, you know, there are so many different approaches towns are taking right now. It's partly because there isn't a whole lot of direction from the state or from, you know, the Vermont League of Cities and Towns that offers, you know, guidance to towns on these sorts of measures. And so we have got sort of lots of different test cases for how different regulations might look. And I'm really curious to see how, you know, how they play out and what we might learn from that process.
Mm. Well, we'll be excited to follow your reporting on this. Carly Berlin covers housing and infrastructure for Vermont Public and VT Digger. Carly, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
In 2014, there were just around 1,000 Vermont homes listed as short-term rentals, according to AirDNA. Now there are around 12,000. Around 20 towns right now are discussing rules to regulate short-term rentals. And our next guests hail from two of those towns. They've both passed new rules around short-term rentals, Killington and Chester. Preston Bristow is the town planner and zoning administrator for Chester in Windsor County. Preston, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Lisa Davis Lewis, the town planner for Killington in Rutland County. Lisa, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I'd like to hear a lay of the land for both of you. How many short-term rentals, if you know, are in each of your towns? Preston, let's start with you.
Well, Chester is a quite different town than Killington, of course, in terms of the number of rentals. But we are adjacent to Ludlow, which is the home of the Okemo ski area. And we... Our select board decided to implement a registration program just so they could get accurate data about what's going on. So the our ordinance became effective in February, and it takes a while to learn this information. But at the point now, we're pretty certain that our number of short-term rentals in town is right around 68. Mm-hmm. They come and they go, of course. So.
Is that higher or lower than what you were expecting?
Well, it's lower. When the initial estimates that were that there were 85 short-term rental units, but at least in terms of how our ordinance works, if somebody is already approved as a tourist lodging, you know, either an inn or a B&B or something like that, they don't have to register as a short-term rental. Mm. But as you know, a lot of your inns and hotels do advertise on the rental programs like Airbnb and VRBO. Mm. So it is a smaller number, but what concerns a town like Chester, even though we're nowhere near one of the major towns, is that we have a population of about 3,000. We have maybe 1,700 dwellings, maybe 800 households. And, you know, even that number of short-term rentals is about 8% of our households. So that was a bit concerning to people and the trend that they seem to be increasing.
Mm. Well, we'll dive into that more in just a moment. But first, Lisa in Killington, can you give us some similar numbers for Killington? Do you know how many short-term rentals are there?
Sure. Let me just start by saying Killington is obviously a very different community. It's a resort community. We have a full-time population of only 1,400 people, but we have almost 3,000 housing units. Based on, I guess, the last census, just about 300 units are owner-occupied, and the rest of the units are really seasonal, used seasonally. So it's very different. The town of Killington embarked in the registration process about 3 years ago when we started getting complaints from residents of homes being rented to, you know, groups of 20 people and impacts on its on the septic. And so we embarked in a registration process, and every year starting November 1st, you have to register. And for the past 3 years, we've had just about 500 people register in the short term in the program. And that number has been pretty stable. So at this point, I think we're fairly confident that the majority of people do register, and that is the number. And it's, you know, fluctuates a little bit, but not significantly.
And Lisa, have you noticed a decrease in issues around the septic systems since this registry got put in place? Like, is the town better able to track and regulate the number of people in these units?
Absolutely. So the town's regulation is pretty clear. If you're allowed to have two people per bedroom plus two additional people. So if you have a three-bedroom house, you could have eight people occupy it on a short-term basis. When we first started this process and, you know, we were asking people to register, what we noticed is people didn't really want to register because they're like, no, I have a five-bedroom house. My house has always been five-bedroom. And the reality is the bedrooms are not how many bedrooms you think you have or how many bedrooms you've been using. It's what your wastewater permit says. So we've kind of, you know, gotten people to understand that it's based on their wastewater permit, and most people comply. We obviously do enforcement. We check Airbnb, we check VRBO to make certain that, you know, you're not advertising for more bedrooms than your permit. But I think now that we're in our third or fourth year, I think that most people comply. And everybody feels like, okay, these are the rules, and we're all playing by the same rules. So for the most part, I think there is compliance.
Well, let's go to the phones. We're getting a number of calls in about this topic of short-term rentals. We'll start with Chris in Burlington. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead. Chris, can you hear
us?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Chris, what's your question? Yep, what's your question or your comment, Chris?
Well, I think the elephant in the room is, when are we going to talk about the real issue that this is, we're making the stock market out of the dignity of our housing and making it impossible for people? Like, I just moved to Burlington and I'm disgusted. I'm in my early 50s living with a guy for $1,200 in a crappy apartment in North Bend, Old North End, and two people rent underneath us. So that building's worth $600,000. They're making like probably about $5,000 a month. It's outrageous what's going on. We're in Bernie Sanders land. I'm new here, but when are we going to get the stock market and all these rich people with their second and third own and hedge fund companies and pensioners out of our housing market and return the next generations? I'm a Gen Xer. What are we doing to all our other generations here? Like, people I work with are leaving Vermont, and they don't want to be here. They'd like to be.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. I think I'm getting your point here, and I'd really love for our guests to weigh in. It seems like you're drawing the distinction, or you're drawing a line between the housing crunch, the affordable housing crunch, and the fact that there are so many short-term rentals. So folks say those are very connected. Other folks say they're not. In Chester, Preston, is that a conversation that's going on in your community?
Oh, it's very much going on. I think, like every community, we are workforce housing is in short supply. I am not sure that by registering or even limiting short-term rentals, we're going to see a lot of more affordable units opening up. But the feeling is nonetheless that the housing market increases. The cost of housing increases because people can afford to buy a house in Chester and a second home and subsidize it by short-term renting. Mm. And that hurts the local, workforce housing market. So it's very much a driver between with what we're doing. And not only that, the select board, we have now what I call a simple registration, but the select board has instituted a 6-month pause on registering any new short-term rentals because they are trying to decide if they want to do further regulation.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So no one can bring new short-term rental units onto the market right now during this pause?
During this pause, that's correct. Okay.
And Lisa, in Killington, I mean, when we're talking about workforce, there's a huge seasonal workforce there in Killington at the ski resorts. Are folks in your community drawing lines between a shortage of affordable or workforce housing and an increase in short-term rentals?
I think everyone understands that there's a severe housing shortage in the state and probably more acute in ski towns, but you know, I think the reasons are complex and it's not fair to draw the direct line between short-term rentals and, shortage of housing. So in Killington, the ski resort has actually purchased a couple of older motels and converted that to housing for its seasonal employees. And the town of Killington, the select board has recently acquired a 70-acre parcel. And we intend to develop that for affordable/workforce housing. So I think our approach is let's try to expand the housing stock and not, label the problem on one particular aspect of the housing market. Mm.
Well, let's pull in some more calls here with Beth in Stowe calling in. Beth, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. So I wanted to just make a couple comments that I think earlier your co-reporter noted that people cite that SDRs bring in a great deal of income to communities during tourism. And I would counter argue that tourism in Vermont has been alive and well for 100 years. It's just where the head in the bed is. And they're going to go to a hotel or a homestead SDR, and you haven't gotten into that, the argument or the discussion going on about non-homestead SDRs versus homestead SDRs. In Stowe right now, this is an incredibly hot topic, a very contentious one going on, as it is when any community brings it up. Stowe, as you noted earlier, is the number one champion of SDRs in this state, and I think it's almost 70% of our housing stock is now second homes or people who come in and buy four or five of them and turn them into mini businesses of STRs. And that's really concerning. We are losing 10 homesteads a year on average in Stowe. We can't pass a school bond because there's a finite amount of people to pay for it. The growing pains are real. We have little to any affordable housing. If you look at Craigslist, a two-bedroom apartment in town without utilities included is $2,500. It's just non-attainable, and there's a lot of growing pains. So I wanted to know from your two experts, the people in the town, how do they enforce their registry? I mean, they noted that they think that's the number. How do they know it's not?
All right, Beth, let's ask them. We'll start with Chester. Preston, how do you measure and regulate this new registry? Measure the accuracy, excuse me.
Yeah. There's kind of two parts of that question. The first part is how do you identify them? And it is actually surprisingly hard. The host platforms, meaning Airbnb, VRBO, and others, they don't want to advertise where these locations are, because then obviously the customer would go directly and circumvent them and they wouldn't make money. So we have to hire, we meaning towns that regulate, have to hire a some sort of a monitoring and compliance company that scrubs the internet and provides addresses, and or at least matches ads with our known addresses of property. So it's a slow process. It's a kind of an imprecise process. We've gone through several steps where you send people a letter and say, here's this ad. And they say, well, that's not my house. That's another house. Or, yeah, I got the ad up, but I'm not renting right now. But I will say that if you're persistent and you work with one of these companies, I think Lisa mentioned it before, you get to a point where you feel like you pretty much got it. And we do have a community group here in Woodstock, rather in Chester, that sort of has eyes and ears to the ground. So I think we feel that we've got pretty much the we know pretty much what's out there. The second half of the question, which I don't want to take up a lot of airtime, is how do we enforce it? And so far, we've been fairly lucky here in Chester without a lot of enforcement. I know Killington has had to do more enforcement, and probably Lisa could talk about that.
Yeah, Lisa Davis Lewis, the town planner for Killington. Thoughts on enforcement? What's been going on there?
Well, unfortunately, I'm the planner and I don't do enforcement. But yes, we have a third party company that manages our registration and looks at, you know, the platforms. And then we have our zoning administrator. We have an interim zoning administrator who does the enforcement. And yeah, he goes out there and checks properties. But I think, and the fact that it's been fairly stable at this point, I think we feel confident that we have the vast majority. No, you're never going to get 100%. There's always people that are going to circumvent the law in any aspect. But I think we feel pretty good that we have most people register. We have, online complaint forum. So people, if you have a complaint, you could post a complaint anonymously. And we don't get a lot of complaints anymore. So, it's eyes and ears on the ground. And I think we do a pretty good job at this point of enforcing.
Well, let's go back to the phones. We have Julie in Jericho with us. Julie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks, Michaela. Yeah, well, I just want to thank you for having this conversation and identify myself as the executive director of the Vermont Short-Term Rental Alliance, who hosted the conference that you are all reporting on or were reported on earlier in the show. And I just wanted the opportunity to correct and answer a question that you got earlier from one of your callers about taxes and safety in vacation rentals. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, none of the tax revenue that's collected by Airbnb or Vrbo go to that company, but they are the responsible taxpayer, and so they remit those taxes directly to the state as a taxpayer. The companies don't receive any of those tax distributions. And the last year, the state brought in over $50 million to the general fund off the backs of just vacation rentals. Mm-hmm. The second piece I wanted to comment about with regards to safety, which is a really important issue and something that we promote and work to educate our members and everybody in the short-term rental community about ensuring safety at their rental properties. Most Vermont communities don't have a registration process for any types of rentals, long-term rentals included. And so whenever this conversation or comes up, or this accusation that, well, what about the safety of short-term rentals? I would encourage our towns to consider all rentals as equal and the safety of all guests and renters, whether it's for 2 days or a year, because there's limited resources in our state for inspecting homes and ensuring code compliance with minimum housing standards. And I think that it's really important that we make sure our long-term renters are getting the same standard of safety that our short-term renters are.
Well, Julie, I just one question, quick question here for you. You know, as we talk about these registries, is there what exactly is the downside to having an Airbnb host register independently with a town? What's that hurting?
You know, honestly, I don't think it's hurting anything. We really welcome the concept of a statewide registration process for vacation rentals. I think it's just the practicality of it has gotten complicated when you try to incorporate the long-term housing market as well, because as you noted, as soon as you hit the 30-day mark, you cross over into this long-term rental category. But 80% of our short-term rental stock is also being used for that medium-term type of accommodation. And so they straddle the line. You know, they fall into both checkboxes. And so it's complicated and nuanced, and I don't think we've figured out really a clear way of capturing that.
Well, Julie, thanks so much for calling in there. We have some time for some closing thoughts from each of our guests. And Preston, with Chester, let's start with you. Either I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on what Julie there with who advocates on behalf of short-term rental owners is saying, or what's coming down the pike for Chester in this area.
I honestly don't know what's coming down the pike. I will say that, you know, we started with a registration. That gives us information. It also, because the issue was brought up before, that here in Chester, we as well are being very strict about septic capacity and saying you can't rent beyond what your septic capacity is. And it also is a chance for the state to inspect houses that are renting to more than 8 occupants. And that improves safety. And we've had one rental in Chester that was actually closed. The others were given an opportunity to comply. Our select board is considering certain things like either limits on number of rentals or limits on how many days a year a rental can rent, or whether certain districts zoning districts have more limits than others, whether rentals should go through site plan review. And I guess one other thing is a waiting period that if you buy a property, you can't rent it for maybe 2 or 3 years. We have been running about a dozen properties that in the last 2 years that when they sell, the buyer turns them into a short-term rental. And so that is a concern. But
I'm sorry, Preston. I'm going to jump in here because we have just about a minute left, and I want to make sure that the Lisa Davis Lewis with Killington has a chance to give her final thoughts.
Sure. I just wanted to add that in terms of safety, Killington also requires fire and safety inspections. If it's under 8, you do self-certify. If it's more than 8, you have to get the inspection. So we feel like, you know, we are really getting a handle on safety issues. And, you know, one thing just to keep in mind is that for many years in Killington, people ran ski houses. So they had a single family home and they, you know, had many people stay in those houses for a ski season. And I think as Julie had said, there is no inspection or limits on septic for when people, you know, run their houses as ski homes or share homes. Whereas at least in the short-term rental, there is some regulation. So that, some food for thought.
Lots of food for thought here. And thank you to everybody who called and emailed during this program. It's certainly a topic we'll return to. And I urge everyone also to follow the reporting of my colleague, Carly Berlin, the housing and infrastructure reporter for Vermont Public and VT Digger. Our guests today were Preston Bristow, the town planning and zoning administrator for Chester, and Lisa Davis Lewis, the town planner for Killington. Thank you to you both.